Welcome to the ECHA podcast from Using Your Creativity for Social Change, which took place on the 11th of May 2009. Uday Thakkar, Managing Director of Red Ochre, provides an introduction and overview to social enterprise. This event was run in association with Red Ochre. ECHA offers support for Arts London students and graduates who are considering freelancing or setting up a business in the creative industries.
As Alison said, I manage a social enterprise called Red Ochre. We're a consultancy and training organisation. We've been going for about 7 years now. I used to work as a consultant in the commercial sector many years ago. And quite a lot of the work I did was with people who came from the creative industries, all walks of life. And there seemed to be no alternative for people other than if you want to start a business, it was, well, it's about maximizing profits. If you went to a bank, it was about how much money are you going to make and how are you going to pay us back. If you went out looking for investors, it was all about, we want you to make as much profit as possible and give it to us. And if you don't, we'll kick you out of your own business. And there was, quite frankly, very few alternatives. There didn't seem to be that many options. Surprisingly, these options have always been there, but sometimes they're hard to find. I didn't actually come across social enterprise as a concept until about 10 years ago. And that came about because I came up with a great idea. I came up with a fantastic idea. It's been a big success. I thought we should do something to help very small charities. Small charities do fantastic work, but get no profile. They find it difficult to market themselves, it's difficult to get funding, it's difficult to get support. And it was the early days of web technology, it was the dot-com bubble days. And I thought we could use web technology to help small charities. And I came up with this concept about trying to engage people who worked in big organizations who could give time and money to these small charities using web technology. And I went out looking for funding, which is what most people need to do when they're starting up any sort of enterprise, because there's a limit to how much you can put in yourself. I was fortunate in that about the third or fourth person I pitched my business idea to said, I'll give you the money you want but on two conditions. One is that it's run as a charity, because that's what he wanted to do. His idea was that he wanted a charity that actually made some money, and that money would be used for other charitable projects that he had some ideas about. Now, I was really more taken with the idea of helping charities, and if it made money for me, great. It was almost as if it was a sideline issue. It wasn't going to be my main business. I was running a commercial consultancy. I had a team of 12 people working for me. And that's where his second rider came in. He said, I'll give you the money, but this is not a consultancy project. I want you to run it because you're the person. You're the person who's come up with the idea. You got the passion. You got the ideas. You want the money, you run it. And run it as a charity. Well, I was so taken with this idea that I thought, right, I'll go for it. And we set up Smart Change back in 1998, and it's still going, and we got something like 6,000 small charities there, and we had to train them up, because in those days they had no idea how to profile themselves on the web. And we went out and got very, very big employers in this country, people like Royal Bank of Scotland. Maybe they're not that big anymore, but you know, at the time they were huge. Aviva, Cable and Wireless, Sky Television, people like that. Because they were waking up to the fact they had to be seen to be doing something good for the community. And we were offering them a very simple solution about getting their employees to engage with charities, and then they could boast about it in their annual report. Look what a good company we are. We're getting our employees to give some of their time and money, and it makes us look good. It was a win-win situation. It made the companies look good, and we got lots of volunteering time and money to these small charities that deserved it. And what happened to us? Well, we made a little bit of money out of them because they paid us fees. Our service to the charities was free. Now, what drove home this whole concept of social enterprise to me was that, like most small people, when you start up something, you keep hitting bureaucracy. One of the biggest bureaucracies we hit in those days was the Charity Commission. They would not allow us to register as a charity because they could not understand our business model. What was it we were trying to do? In what way was this going to bring about social change and community benefit? And it didn't seem to matter. We said that we're going to have all these hundreds of thousands of people giving time and money to these small charities through the web. The moment you mentioned technology and web, they switched off. And after a year of fighting them, they eventually could see what we were doing, and a lot of the small charities wrote to them and explained how good we were and how supportive we were. So in the end, they turned around and said, okay, we'll go along with it, we'll register you as a charity. So I got a letter one day saying, congratulations, you're a charity, here's your charity registration number. So we had a little celebration. We went out and got a couple of bottles of champagne, thought, well, it's only taken us 18 months, fight the bureaucracy, we're there. Little did we know. Very next morning, I get another letter from the Charity Commission, same person who had written to me the day before, saying, now you are not allowed to do what you're doing, will you cease doing what you're doing immediately? What? So I was on the phone to him. So what's all this about? We've been talking for 18 months with you. You never told us, what's the problem? You know, what's this letter about? And he said, well, what you're doing is called secondary purpose trading. You're not allowed to do that as a charity, and you can't do this anymore, and you have to do something else, and blah, blah, blah. And I couldn't really understand him, because even though I had 20 years experience of running small businesses, starting enterprises and supporting other people, I didn't really have much idea about charity law. Basically, charity is not allowed to trade except under certain circumstances, and what we were doing was outside those circumstances. So he said basically we weren't allowed to trade, and that was our business model, which was actually going out and getting fees from those big companies so that we could direct their help to the small charities. So my question then was, why are you telling me this now? Why didn't you tell me this over the last 18 months? And his response was, you weren't a charity before. Now you are, now I can tell you. So I said, well, okay, what am I supposed to do? And he said, start a social enterprise. And that was my introduction to social enterprise. I didn't know what social enterprise meant. Anyway, that meant I suddenly found I was not only running a charity, but I was also running a social enterprise. But what is a social enterprise? Everywhere you go now, social enterprise is on people's lips. Every single government department is going on about we're championing social enterprise. There's a whole series of meetings going on this week where they're going to promote social enterprise as a solution to unemployment. Social enterprise as a solution to delivering healthcare. Social enterprise as a way of improving the environment. Social enterprise as a way of solving the prison problem. This is now the solution, the silver bullet for government to bring in efficiency and effectiveness within the social sector. But in truth, there is no legal definition for social enterprise. And what we now call social enterprise has existed since probably human beings first started living in communities. A lot of organizations that behave, and I'm come to what I mean by that, behave like social enterprises, don't even realize they're behaving like social enterprises. A lot of people call themselves social enterprises, by my definition, are not social enterprises. But if you think about how long social enterprise has been around for, I always say to people, I mean, I put on my beer belly when I was at university and never managed to shake it off. But if you think about beer brewing, because we used to do this, you'd go on, you'd go around breweries and things, and quite a lot of these breweries, a lot of the brewing started back in the 4th, 5th, 6th century in sort of industrial terms. It was monasteries and abbeys that started brewing beer. And what they do is they'd sell that beer to the local villages and towns. And the money they made out of it, they invested in hospitals and orphanages, in agriculture. So they were using enterprise, they were using the concept of making money to deliver social good back then. And it must have existed long before then. Here's just an example of something that's going on here. So that to me is the inkling of that fact that this sort of activity, this dynamism of using profitability and enterprise to create social change has been there with us all the time. What has been hidden from us is because we've for so long been used to the government handing out money and grants and so on to engineer social change that this thing about doing it for yourself has become hidden, and now suddenly it's popped up. It's there everywhere. So to my mind, trying to encapsulate what it is that social enterprise is that if you were to look at this chart. If you're a purely commercial organization and what you're looking to do is just maximize your returns, you'd be down on this axis. You're trying to make as much money as possible. And if you're a charity, you're trying to deliver social change. It's all about heart and about community giving and community change and support, and not really about making money. You're somewhere up there. But as a social enterprise, you're in that middle course. It's about money. It is about making money. A lot of people around will tell you social enterprise isn't about making money, and they go on about not-for-profit. That is not social enterprise. Social enterprise is having an enterprise solution, but at the heart of it, right embedded inside, is something about creating social change and doing community good. It is about being ethical. It's about delivering that social change as part and parcel of what your enterprise is. Quite often it's characterized by the three P's. It's about people, it's about doing good things, it's about social change, it's about creating social change within people and communities. It's about the planet. How can we go about having enterprises that don't damage the planet and maybe bring some positive good to the planet? But it is also about making profits. It is, at the heart of it, it's about making profits and using that profit to help the first two P's. What we've lost track of in the West, and increasingly even in the developing countries, is that we've gone down this route of just make profit and greed, and it doesn't matter what we damage, whether it's the planet or other people or other communities, and we've lost that community spirit, that thing that has always been there. We're in a blip over the last 200-300 years where capitalism has actually gone berserk. Here is a chance now to right that wrong. Social enterprise actually is an avenue that allows people to go out and do things good, but not lose that ability to go out and make money. So really, it's about trading in order to fulfill social aims. Other definitions have been it exists to bring together people and communities for economic development and social gain. Whatever it is, it's about making money, and it's about bringing about social change because of that. But social enterprise is also controversial. Depending on who you ask, they'll give you different definitions and different interpretations of what a good social enterprise is. One of the biggest areas of dispute is ownership. What sort of ownership should social enterprises have? Even now, the umbrella body for social enterprises, the Social Enterprise Coalition, is arguing amongst itself. Should social enterprises be owned by the communities they serve, or can you have private ownership? What do you do with profit distribution? As a social enterprise, you're meant to make profits. Who should use those profits? Should it all go towards the community benefit, or should some of it go to the people who put in the risk and time to create that enterprise? And the other big issue is funding. Any enterprise, whether it's a commercial enterprise, social enterprise, the hardest thing when you start off with, however good your idea, however passionate you are about it, however many hours you put behind it, at the end of the day, you're not going to get it started, and you're not going to be able to scale up that business without some form of funding. And where do you get the funding from? Because quite often, social enterprises work right in the margins of society. They work in places where commercial organizations don't want to work. Quite often, they work in areas where there isn't high profitability. And that makes it a risky proposition for normal avenues for funding. The model, trying to encapsulate it, is that the social enterprises have a choice. They sell goods or services. They make a profit. And then they have a choice. They can turn around and reinvest that money within their own social enterprise. Because it may be that you're employing people who are long-term unemployed, you're creating jobs, you may be creating wealth, and actually creating learning within the communities that you work and live in. Or you could actually use that profit to benefit other vehicles of social change, be it other social enterprises, community groups, or charities. When I ran Smart Change, as you remember, we were told by the Charity Commission we couldn't trade out of the charity. So we had to create a captive subsidiary company, a trading company. And that trading company charged fees to all those big employers, and the profits we made out of that were donated back up to the charity called Smart Change, so he could go off and do other charitable stuff. one of the contentious areas is that this is normally accepted. Everyone thinks this is fine. But maybe some of this should also go back to the people who funded this or put in the risk in starting the social enterprise. And that there is a big argument about. So where does social enterprise exist within the spectrum of organizations within the United Kingdom? Again, if you look at this, at one end we've got charitable trusts. These are charities that exist just to hand money out. They don't actually do anything themselves. They have endowment funds or someone's given them lots of money and they dole it out. You apply to them and they give you the money to do some social change. So they don't do anything else other than sort of hand money out. And at the other end, you have pure commercial businesses, hard-nosed, hard-headed businessmen who are just interested in making lots of money. When I first started this slide, I used to have another one here, another circle here, and I had it labeled the mafia. Because they're sort of not just purely commercial, you know, they'll kill to make money. I was actually told to take it off, it was dangerous to talk about it. But somewhere in between, if you look at this, you have charitable trusts, and then you have operational charities. Charities like possibly NSPCC or Save the Children or so on, there are people going out and doing things to help the poor, the hungry, the sick. Then you have service providing charities. The charities actually try and act as a safety net to the government. People like Action for Children, possibly, or Barnardo's. They're looking after kids who might otherwise be badly treated or maltreated, and they try and do something about it. They're actually delivering some sort of service, and quite often government departments, local authorities, PCTs, health authorities and so on will pay them to deliver this service because they're very good at it. On this side, if you move the other way, there are lots of companies that think, well, maybe we should do something about helping charities in the social sector. We'll sell goods and services to them, but possibly at a little bit of a discount. And then you have commercial companies with very strong social responsibility ethos. It could be the likes of Innocent, or it could be Body Shop. And somewhere in between those that are providing services and these people with very strong social credentials, it's this sort of blended culture, which is social enterprise. It's about making money, but it's also about delivering some sort of social change, which is what's happening here. And one of the one of the more successful ones is something like Big Issue. They're tackling the problem of homelessness by actually giving them jobs, getting the homeless to go out and sell a magazine and making money out of it. So they're creating, subsidizing and actually helping what the government needs to be doing, which is helping the homeless get employment and skills, and at the same time trying to make money out of it with a strong social ethos. There are all sorts of businesses that would come under the definition of social enterprise, depending on which interpretation you decide upon. There are charity trading arms, the sort of thing I mentioned about Smart Change having a trading arm, or the Oxfam shops. If you walk down the high street, see all those Oxfam shops, those are trading arms of charities. There are all sorts of employee-owned businesses, so that your social enterprise model is your community are the employees that work for you, and you share out the profits amongst yourselves. By that definition, John Lewis would become a social enterprise. 2-3 years ago, when this was mentioned that John Lewis might come into this, everyone went, this is unbelievable, that can't be right. Nowadays, John Lewis are quite regularly asked to come and talk about social enterprise because they exemplify this employee-owned business model. The cooperatives have for a long time championed the cause of social enterprise. They see themselves as social enterprises because there are people who come together for their common good. Again, they're doing things for the people that belong within the cooperative, and they're about making money. There are social firms. Social firms are those that exist where at least 25% of the people employed there are in some way incapacitated from working in the labour market, either through disability, long-term unemployment, illness, whatever it is. It's a way of actually getting people into work through enterprise. There are lots of community businesses. These are businesses where, for some reason or other, your community doesn't have a business. It's not being serviced in some way. We're currently working with a number of community organizations. There's a housing estate outside Luton. There are 7,000 people living on this housing estate. If you want to get your hair dressed, you have to go outside the estate. If you want your car service, you have to go outside the estate. You want to have a party, go outside the estate. So there's no jobs being created in the estate. All the wealth, what wealth they have, is being spent outside. The community decided that wasn't good enough. There were all sorts of agencies set up to try and help them, and they weren't good enough because they took all the money and had lovely offices and lots of pensions and cars, but nothing trickled down to the community. So the community stood up and said, right, we're going to do it for ourselves. They're going to train people to become hairdressers. They're going to start an MOT garage. They're going to take a disused building and turn it into a club and a pub. They've come up with lots of different ideas. Their problem was that, on the one hand, it'll create jobs, it'll create skills, it'll retain wealth within the community. When it came down to putting it down on paper, they had real problems because they didn't know how to do it. And that's where we're working with them. We're helping them do the business planning, the strategy, the funding forecast, and we're working with government departments to get that process going so that they can start these community businesses. And also ethical businesses. Those increasingly are the people coming to us and saying, we want to start a business, we want to make some money. But it isn't just about making money. We want to be ethical. We don't want to rip people off. If we have a supply line, we want to make sure that our suppliers get well paid, they're fair trade, that our goods are sourced from people and places where they're not doing damage to the planet. A lot of them wouldn't even consider themselves to be social enterprises. And a lot of these people don't think of themselves as social enterprises, but in my mind, all of them are, because at the end of the day, social enterprise is about creating change through trading. And whereas about 15 years ago, when I was still working within the commercial sector as a business advisor, a lot of people used to come to me and say, I just want to set up a business. The majority of people who now approach us about setting up a business and not thinking about social enterprise particularly still want to have ensure that they've got ethical values and ethos embedded within their own organization. And one of the best exponents of this, again, I would suggest, is someone like Innocent Drinks. It's all about having pure juice. It's all about recycling. It's about devoting some of the profits to charity. It's about being allowing a lot of employee involvement in what they do. When it comes to the arts, there's an increase in people really interested in again, social enterprise. And it's, in a way, I've always felt that people within the art sector are probably best fitted to become social entrepreneurs. Because all of you are about change. Because to my mind, art is about change. It's about using your skills to bring about change. It may be changing the way you view the world or the way you design things. It's because most of you have passion. You're passionate about what you do, and to be a successful entrepreneur, you need that. And those skills can be harnessed to go out and do an amazing amount of good, not only just creating good design and so on that will help people, but actually help the communities that you work in. Got Village Underground, in fact, I put it up there because I was expecting a speaker from Village Underground, but he's not here, but they basically turned around and said, right, a lot of people who start up their arts enterprises or want to do something have trouble getting space. And they came up with a simple solution. They found an old disused warehouse and converted that into an art space. And as that became popular, they tried to find some other ways of actually creating more space. And they came up with a simple solution. They went to London Underground and said, can we have some of your disused carriages? So otherwise they were just going to landfill sites or just rotting. What they've done is taken some of these carriages, put them in the courtyard and piled them up on top of each other and created more space. So they helped actually stop the damage to the planet because recycling whole carriages created this space. It's attracted lots of people within the arts community to come and work there and display their arts there. That in turn has led to other artists opening up in buildings around them. These are all derelict areas. These are areas that have been designated as being underperforming local areas, high unemployment, high crime, lots of graffiti. And suddenly because all these artists were moving in, the properties were being done up, that suddenly brings about all these cafes and restaurants and shops, and suddenly you've got a whole area being revitalized and regenerated. And a lot of councils now suddenly see the arts as a way of creating regeneration. Haringey, which is one of the poorer boroughs in London, have gone out and actually seeded funding to get arts clusters up and running, just to do this sort of thing. Get some artists together, it generates interest, you get a lot of media publicity, other people come in and suddenly the whole area starts taking off. Design has a great impact on the way people behave and do things. We're working with Brunel University, where Professor Heinz Wolf, one of these archetypal mad German professors, a bow tie, fluffy hair and glasses up here, and he's always on television talking with a strong German accent, has come up with a way of actually helping the elderly to communicate with the rest of the world and simplifying the way technology is used. But as a scientist, he just came up with some of the ideas, and he's been working with designers to actually simplify the whole system and come up with devices that the elderly can use, because they're usually poor sighted and have arthritic fingers and so on, and they can't use keyboards and can't look at screens. And it's about coming up with very simple handheld devices that the elderly can use. We've come across, and I can't tell you who it is, but we've come up working with an organization that have come up with a way of actually making the usability of drinks that a lot of people have trouble actually getting cans and glasses and swallowing out of them when they have certain disabilities. And they've come up with different ways of getting a methodology of allowing people to drink and not having the disability come in their way. They're using design to do that. Another organization we worked with was called DIY Kyoto, measuring energy consumption through simple meters. They're going out helping the planet but using design as a way of doing that. Alison's mentioned Michelle Baharier from Cooltown Arts. Again, Michelle's been working for many years down in Southwark, not one of the best areas to be in, and she's got a fairly large shed which is used for arts exhibitions, and that helps rehabilitate people who've gone through mental disability and have had other social problems. They're doing fantastic work out there. And again, we work with people like Michelle. I know she's going to come and talk to you about funding from Unlimited, but last year we managed to help her get £250,000 out of the Arts Council in the face of the fact that the Arts Council were cutting back funding for most other arts organisations because they're doing such good stuff down there. Another example is Sari UK, an Indian lady, decided what she would do is a lot of South Asian women throw their old saris away. So she went to them and said, don't throw your saris away, give them to me. So she's recycling the saris. She designs and makes them into dresses. She has created a couple of workshops where she's actually employing women who've been long-term unemployed and teaching them how to make dresses and how to design dresses. She's then selling them through a couple of retail outlets as high fashion items. And apparently people like Sherry Blair and so on are wearing her clothes. So she's actually got multiple impacts. She's recycling, she's making money, she's creating, she's skilling up long-term unemployed through design and dressmaking and skilling other people into the retail trade. And the money she makes goes into going out and doing more of this. We recently worked with an organization called Street Breakers. These are young black men whose friends have been been killed through knife crime. And what they've done is they've actually turned around and said that, can we do things that will help our community fight crime? And they come up with fantastic ideas, not just health issues and getting people to go out and do things rather than go around in gangs, but they come up with things like allowing people to design T-shirts and selling those T-shirts then to do more social good. They've also come up with this amazing idea. They've gone back to the police and said, all those knives and guns that you confiscated, can we melt them down and turn them into little sculptures and paperweights and things and sell those? So that the very cause of the crime is now being used to generate money that will help some of the other youths get away from gangs and get away from knife crime. So there are all sorts of different models there, different ways. As I said, that some of those ideas we're using, I've particularly mentioned because it impacts on the art cycle. It impacts on those sorts of people who are interested in design and arts and fine arts and graphic arts. All of you are able to go out and do something that will actually generate some social good as well, make money for yourself and the people working with you. One of the issues that most people starting up in business have is that they need support to do that. Having an idea is not in itself enough. you need help with strategy. There is this thing about finance. Where do you get finance from? How do you access it? How do you go out and purchase the goods you need? How do you negotiate deals? Actually establishing contracts and networks. And actually, a lot of it is actually grounding people into saying, calm down, you've got a fantastic idea, don't get carried away with it, things have to be done a step at a time. And a lot of it is applying good common sense and practical ideas from what other people have done. Because a lot of people who come to us have got great ideas and are sort of saying, well, today I've got nothing, but tomorrow I want to be selling millions and millions of pounds worth of goods, and they've forgotten all the bits that come in between, or they get carried away with their wild ideas. And a lot of our help and a lot of the help that people give is about grounding those ideas and making them into reality, getting them beyond a dream. Currently, there's a huge amount of support for people who want to go into social enterprises. Just about every single government department is putting money aside to help people who are thinking of starting up social enterprises. A lot of local authorities are funding social enterprises. A lot of grant-making trusts are funding social enterprises. There's an increasing number of people who are dissatisfied and disillusioned with the city who are looking or finding ways to come out and invest money in social enterprises. And that has been around for a while, but there's an increase in activity. So if any of you come across things such as the Divine Chocolate or some of these fair trade coffees, these are all social enterprises that got investors, ethical investors, to come in and help them grow their businesses, and more of them coming in. So there's a big move, particularly brought about, I think, within the last 2 years because of the troubles we've had in the financial services market and generally what's happened in the commercial sector. People are waking up to the fact and saying maybe that wasn't the best thing to do. And quite often, quite cynically, a lot of people who worked in those markets are now without jobs and are now turning around and saying, maybe it's time we paid our dues and did something that gave something back to society. So there's a big change in social and economic perceptions. And in a way, a lot of people are saying the time is arrived for social enterprise. I think social enterprise was always there. I think what has happened is in the past we've lost that feeling for community good and community involvement and just concentrate on personal greed. Maybe the time has arrived for social enterprise, and this is the time to cash in on it. All of you, as I said when I started, you've got passion, you've got ideas, you've got the willingness to go out and do things that will change things. Here's the time where there's a lot of free support out there, a lot of funding available, and this is the time to cash in on that support, to promote your ideas, to actually get your enterprises up and running. It may well be that the downturn in the economy is going to affect some of those funding bodies and support organisations in the near future, and some of that support may not be around for much longer. So certainly if you're thinking of doing something, this is the time to start thinking about it.
Hi, my name is Vincenzo, and with my business partner we recently set up a social design agency. We claim to be a social enterprise, but what we realized that in terms of funding, it's really hard to find funding for micro social enterprises that go less than 5 employees. Because I've been talking with different agencies and people giving money to social enterprise. You need to employ at least 5 people. What would be your response to that?
Well, that probably is true. It's not a social enterprise. I think anyone starting up an enterprise who is struggling, even under normal circumstances, most people starting up in business or starting enterprises have real problems actually getting funding. As I mentioned earlier, starting a social enterprise, because there is this element of social good and not just concentrating on profit, but using some of the profit to do good things, it does make it difficult for people, A, to understand what it is you're about, and B, they can't see the sort of financial return they're expecting to see, so it makes you a riskier proposition. Again, Alison mentioned an organisation called Unlimited, who will give up to £5,000 to individuals who are thinking of starting up a social enterprise. And after a year, if you're successful and can show what you're doing is actually delivering, you can go back and ask for another £20,000. There are those sorts of entities, such as Unlimited, there are not many of them. Increasingly, there are, depending on your legal structure, if you're set up in a legal form that doesn't allow distribution of profits, then you can actually approach people like the Big Lottery Fund and various other grant-making bodies who will fund you to get started if you can prove that what you're doing is bringing about some social good. Beyond that, it comes back to the 3 F's that most enterprises have to put up with, either fools, friends, or family. If you can't find it yourself, find someone who's stupid enough to invest in you, or get some friends to do it, or get your family to do it. Bank finance at the moment is a bit of a problem because all the banks are suffering quite badly and are very, very risk averse. However, despite that, if it's a good idea and you can actually come across well as to what you're doing, we've recently helped a number of people get some loan finance out of banks. There are a number of investment houses looking to invest in social enterprises, but again, they want to see a really good, strong management team, a good business plan, and plans to scale up your business, because if they're going to put money in, they want to see it grow so that they will get some sort of return at the end of it. They're not looking for the sort of commercial returns that you might get out of a commercial business, but they do want some sort of financial return. And there are, again, a number of organizations that are handling that sort of thing, and Nesta recently have helped support a social investment fund just for that reason. The big issue I mentioned earlier, the people who set up the big issue have set up the Big Invest. They have both loan and investment funds specifically for social enterprises. Unfortunately, because of the cost of this, the minimum thing is that it's got to be at least £50,000 that you want to borrow. But there are sources of funds around. And can I suggest that, again, if you go to the Red Ochre website, we have a resource center there called Smart Resources, lead you onto that. We give you, there are lists and lists of places you can go to for different types of funding. And again, we put up a lot of information about the support that's available, particularly in London.
I was just going to ask, with your support program, could you help, find contacts for funding and stuff like that as well?
Yes, because we have got good connections with various funders. But again, this comes back to, have you got a good business idea? Do you actually know what you're doing? And are you up to the job? Because quite frankly, we've developed good relationships with various funders on the basis that we actually refer people with good ideas mm-hmm. that are fundable. A lot of people get very angry with us. They come up with wild ideas and then get angry and say, well, why don't you put us in touch with them? And we say, we'll blow our credibility. If you go there and make an idiot of yourself, it's going to reflect badly on us, and it means that we can't help people in the future. What it comes down to, if you've got a good idea and you don't have to have done it before, but you've got to show that you've got the persistence and the passion to see it through. In most cases, those people who've got those qualities and have got a good idea tend to find they can start something up. It might not go as fast as you want, but it'll happen for you.
That's the end of this ECHO podcast. Thanks for listening.